Welcome to Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron, getting ready for Contact in the Desert 2019, just in a few weeks. And we have another speaker that's in studio through Zoom, but we're excited to have him here, Michael Horn, who is the authorized American media representative for the Billy Meyer Contacts, which he has researched since 1979, the year I was born. Plus 10. But he is so much more than that. He is an award-winning writer and producer of documentary films, as well as being a best-selling author, he's a prize-winning painter, award-winning songwriter, music and video producer, science researcher, international lecturer, credentialed teacher, humorist, theatrical set designer. My God, does this guy have time to do anything? Healthcare professional, one of the first creators of digital online book publishing, the inventor of portable travel neck pillow, and even a pioneer in commercial water purification applications. So, wow, that was a mouthful. But please welcome, the truth be told, the one and only Michael Horn.
What is it that you don't do, Michael? Because that might be easier.
I should have said he's not.
Plus the kung fu stuff, the karate stuff, there's other stuff.
Tai Chi and Qigong. Pardon me. Yeah, I've enjoyed that for a long time.
Wow. And very impressive. And I know you're going to be here at Contact in the Desert, which we're going to be there. We're excited to see you in person, but also to have you here today.
Thank you. Glad to do the interview. Truly.
Great. Holy busy guy. My God.
I'm sorry?
You're such a busy guy. You got so much going on.
Well, better than
not.
Right. I guess. Well, let's jump in here and let's start with the Billy Meyer stuff. Obviously, that's what we want to get to. So, what you've been looking at this guy's stuff since 1979? What do you today feel is the strongest evidence that Billy has that he has had contact with extraterrestrial beings?
Well, there's actually three categories of it. So, I'll give you the first one that most people are familiar with, if they are familiar at all with the Billy Meyer contacts. That would be the physical evidence, the photographs, films, metal samples, etc. And what most people probably don't know is that the earliest authentication of Meyer's evidence was back in about 1978, 79, that he was submitting his photographs to an investigative team, and they were having the photos and films analyzed independently, as they did with other evidence in the case. And that was, let's say, up to about 1980, 81 or so. Then about 3 years ago, a man named Raul Zahi, along with another fellow named Chris Locke, either Zahi did two and then he and Chris Locke did one, independent analyses of three separate categories of Meyer's UFO photos and film. They found that was authentic. Unhoaxed, same conclusions as before. There are also two award-winning special effects companies that have evaluated Meyer's films especially. They both said that they were not manipulated. There was no hoaxing. They found that there were no models. So the photographic evidence then was given yet another endorsement for authenticity when I was contacted about 2 years ago, 2 years and a few months. On a January morning, 8:30, I got a phone call from a guy I didn't know, kind of gruff-sounding older guy named Joe, who said that he was an investigator. He didn't tell me what kind of investigator he was, but he was an investigator. He wanted to know if I would speak to him about the Meyer case. He found this information online, and he thought it could be a hoax. And I said, well, of course I'll talk to you because it's what I do. And we spoke with each other for a period of about 3 months, back and forth. I was responding to his questions and what have you. And then he kind of disappeared. About 5 months later, somewhere in late August, I got a call on a Saturday morning from the same Joe character saying that he wanted to tell me who he was. And he also wanted to tell me now about the Meyer case. So he said, first of all, that he was formerly the top investigator and supervisor for the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigation, that's the OSI. He claims he had done this for the Air Force late 60s to early 70s. He said, I didn't have to take his word for it, that I should check his email. And there was an abundance of actual official documentation on this man, Joe Tisk, and his endorsements, his record with the military, one glowing endorsement after another. So he easily established his credibility. What happened next was, he said, now I'm going to tell you about your Billy Meyer case. And I said, well, go ahead, because he hadn't approached me in, you know, in the most friendly way. I'm set that straight. He said, well, I went back and forth with you for a few months. I still wasn't satisfied. So I looked at all the evidence that you had, and I went back to 1964 with the documentation that you have on your website. And I applied the military protocol to examining evidence. And what I will tell you is that the Billy Meyer case is 100% ironclad authentic. And I will take on any skeptics in your behalf. And he did. He talked to maybe two, three. And he said after that, there's really no point. These people don't understand actual research, investigation, the protocols, forensic, this, that, and the other stuff. But he says, you know, leave my contact information up on your site if people want to contact me. Well, that was the final authentication. Since Joe's article was put up on my blog, we've had no more attacks from any credible skeptics. Every now and then on YouTube, somebody will say, oh, he used models, you know, the usual. But that's not really the highest standard of proof in the case. There are, at this point, over 250 specific examples of what I refer to as prophetically accurate scientific information. What that means is that Meyer verifiably published specific information on a wide variety of sciences, quite a bit about astronomical things, before we officially discovered it. That means he trumped JPL, NASA, MIT, USGS over and over again. And this is what caught my attention, actually, back starting in about 1988, that I had been given 1,800 pages, the original contact reports, lots of stuff. I was given those in 1986 in Sedona, Arizona, by a guy who was interested in UFOs. I'll leave it at that because I don't want to go into who he was. His career is not very noble. However, he had that material. And I read these transcripts, 1,800 pages, over and over for the first 6-8 months. And then I put them away. And then in 1988, I opened a local newspaper in L.A. where I was living at the time. And there was an article that said, A-bomb testing, ozone damage tied together. And I thought, that's interesting. And I was reading it, and there were percentages and things within that article. And I suddenly just stopped. I said, "What? I know this. How could I already know this information?" And I reached under the bed where I'd stashed all these volumes of pages, and within the first 100 pages was the first time that Meyer was being told specifically about the ozone damage being tied to A-bomb explosions, the percentage of damage, and that he, Meyer, should contact a professor at Harvard named, I think it was, well, it'll come to me somewhere, kind of an Irish name. Anyway, he was supposed to contact this guy and let him know, and he did, but he never got any response. That led to my noticing more and more in newspapers, TV, radio, and then ultimately on the internet even more, these new discoveries that I already knew and that I wasn't the only one. People all over the world who had these transcripts knew this stuff. And I recently had an interesting experience with a scientist here. I could go into later if you want. I want to just nail into to give you the rest of this answer. There's no way on earth, literally on earth, that a reclusive one-armed, quote-unquote, Swiss farmer could be publishing information going back to the 50s and 70s about specific scientific discoveries that hadn't been made on Earth yet. There's no way. We have it in books with copyrights. I ran this by, I was at a MUFON event 6 years ago in Las Vegas because they gave me a free table for my books and stuff. And I had all the books and videos out on the table. And this guy comes walking over like this furrowed brownie, shaking his head from side to side. And said, oh, hi, can I help you? What do you, you know? He says, yeah, I'm interested in UFOs, but this Meyer case has got to be a hoax. I said, really, a hoax? I said, mm-hmm. So what do you do, sir? I'm a retired judge. Oh, okay. So, Your Honor, may I step into your courtroom? And the guy was very cool, tough as nails, very cool. Step right in. How can I help you? I said to him, sir, if I say to you that NASA is not the first to discover that the surface of the planet Mercury is contracting, which causes is caused by the metal core of the planet, but rather that a friend of mine in Switzerland discovered that 32 years before NASA did, would I have to prove that to you? He said, well, of course you'd have to prove it. I said, so if I take this book, I had a book right there, and I open it up and I show you the front of it, I said, do you see the copyright? Yes, I see it. And if I go in here to this, because I knew where this whole thing was, I said, and where this man, Billy Meyer, is talking to this alleged extraterrestrial woman and says, I've always wondered what the reason for the contraction of the surface of Mercury is. And she says, well, that's easy. It's really because of the metal core. Close book, put it down. I said, Your Honor, in your courtroom, who prevails? And he just sat back like this. He was standing. But he kind of leaned back, and then he came and he said, you do. How much is the film, the book, the this, the that? Point being this. This is one of the reasons why, first of all, I'm extremely grateful that I got invited to present at Contact in the Desert. And the reason I say that is because for at least 10 years now, the Meyer case has basically been blackballed in ufology in terms of exposing things. It's been blackballed in ufology for far longer, but I was making presentations at International UFO Congress and all this stuff. But then that stopped once I came forward and made certain presentations in the IUFOC venues. So when Victoria invited me to do this presentation, I was very happy to accept it. And I just tell people, this is the only evidence, because everybody, you know, they always say, well, what do you think of this case? And what do you think of that case? And I said, I am not aware of much of a case, because all of the evidence is either completely anecdotal or doesn't pass muster when you analyze it. It doesn't mean that there aren't extraterrestrial UFOs. I think most of them are clearly secret military, but nobody ever comes forward with hardcore evidence that is then put through the really rigorous examination process that Myers has been. So that's part of the whole thing.
Okay, listen, I get the prophecy thing, and that there is something there. But let's start first the heart of the case, which is these photographs. Mm-hmm. These photographs, me knowing nothing, and I know you said they've been studied and they've been proven to be actual photos or whatever. Just as a layman looking at these, they don't appear genuine to me at all. They look like they're faked photographs.
Models and strings, right?
Correct. Like, this is a model from 1950 when you watch one of these cheesy C movies.
Well, look at it carefully. Do you see the reflection of the tree, perhaps, in the sky in the craft? You know, this is a good point. By the way, let me tell you something. The fact that you will bring this forward publicly is very important, because a lot of people will either be dismissive or they'll just believe something. The photo we're looking at right here is one of nine photos taken within the same time period of an hour or whatever, where this craft was moved around a tree. Now, how do we even know that that's not a miniature tree? Well, there was a professor named James Dierdorf, who was a professor at OSU, that's Oregon State University. He was a professor of comparative religions and meteorology, and he knew people in the forestry department. So he took samples of Meyer's photographs where the trees, and you know there are a number of more trees are prominent, and he sent them to these experts, and he said, forget about the silver thing. Is that a model or a miniature tree? There were four or five of these forestry professors who wrote him back and said, no. Those are, and they named the species of the trees in each case. They said those trees are full-size mature trees. We can tell you that, like in this particular photo, at the top you see a separation between the bulk of the top of the tree and then what looks like a little Christmas tree. And he says that's called nesting. That's what happens on mature tree. And they explained it to him. Then further, when they examined other photos, other than this one, they zoomed in on, they said, you'll see here are pruning marks. This is a tree that was pruned here. And models and miniatures of trees not only don't have nesting, they don't have pruning marks. And they went on in their whole thing. Now, the other thing in this photo, Tony, you have a pretty clear shot of that UFO that's taken from a distance. We know that because also in this series, we have a photograph or two where there's some tree branches in front between this UFO and Meyer, because his viewfinder was stuck on infinity and distance. But I don't want to overtalk it. What I can tell you is this. The analyses that were done with state-of-the-art equipment back in the late 70s and 80s were able to, they were able to determine that these were full-size objects, and that in some of the photos when the craft was in the sky, it was easier to detect that there was energy signature around them, and in one case, a connection energetically to a Swiss Mirage jet that flew by. Now, another thing, you know, I don't want to rattle on and just stop me, but there's nobody else has a photograph of anywhere near this clarity.
Nothing they're, like this. And okay, let's say they are authentic. They look fake to me. They look like a silly 50s stereotypical UFO. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But the question is, what's our reference point for what a UFO should look like? In other words, if we say, you know, it looks like a fit. Well, you know, UFOs have been sighted throughout history. And classically, they're disc-shaped craft for very simple aerodynamic reasons. So while Meyer also has some pretty strange craft, the wedding cake craft, energy ships, balls, et cetera, we get this traditional disc shape because that's what a lot of these things. Here you go. Now you can see, if you look down, you won't see it as clearly in this one, but if you look down to the left of the tree, right above where the lettering is, very there, there's a little bump out there where there was a pruning mark. And again, you see this kind of, you know, the nesting from another angle. So Meyer was moving around here, and you see the reflection of the sky. You see the reflection of part of the tree. But you're right about how it looks, because one of the things about this case is the UFO photos and films were intended to provoke controversy. They even moved them around so they would look jerky. There's a famous film called The Pendulum.
Yeah, it looks like it's on a string. Yeah.
Yeah, except that if you, I have the free analysis on my website, and that was done just a few years ago. It was done, actually, it was done back around 1979, 80 by Nippon TV. And in Japan, and they're pretty diligent, they said, A, real film footage. Remember, these are pre-computer. Mm-hmm. This is not video. This is film. And they said there's no cuts in the film. And when you look at the actual beginning of that film, the craft that's down by the tree, the top of that frame is way up here. And they used mathematical and physics-related measurements to show that if something had been connected from a distance proportion to that to swing and control it, it wouldn't have been, they couldn't have stopped it at an angle. That craft stops. And on top of that, in one of the frames, the craft appears in two places at the same time. So this is the kind of thing that we are being kind of prodded to look at. There's nothing wrong in my world when people say that looks phony to me. That's got to be a hoax. Okay, good. So here's, we get to another thing. I just mentioned this guy, Joe Tisk. Joe took photographs from 1964 in India that were reported on in a newspaper in 1964, paper that was called the Delhi Statesman, where the reporter in 64 is describing these photos that Meyer takes. He's got 80 of them in an album in the middle of nowhere in India, and he's describing them. And we still have almost a dozen of those photos. So Tisk says, very simply in his whole article, he says, look, the skeptic can't tell me where this 27-year-old vagabond traveling around with a 1940s camera gets 80 UFO photos. They're viewed by this reporter. You still have some of these originals. Where did he get them? Those are real photos. If you can't pinpoint that those were available somewhere, he says, your arguments are over. And that goes even more for all this stuff.
Well, so, Michael, wait, what do you say about Billy's ex-wife coming out and saying that she says that he faked the photos?
She said he faked the photos, right?
Correct.
Except she also passed a lie detector test saying he didn't and is on video with her children pointing to drawings the kids made of craft while she describes them seeing the craft. The only other answer I ever give to that is after their divorce. And sometimes, you know, when people get divorced, they don't always maintain all the highest level of.
Listen, okay. I'll give you a pass on this one. I'm a big fan. Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Yeah. So what happened was her bank account increased many fold after she divorced and was contacted by a guy named Luc Bergin in Brussels, I believe it was, who is a debunker of UFO cases, and he got her to come forward. So she's already on record. She passed a lie detector test saying it was authentic, and she'd seen one of the ETs in her living room. So anecdotal, pro or con, that's fine. She could say it's true, and she can say it isn't, but that's where we... That's why I said, while the UFO stuff, it's been authenticated. I personally brought that pendulum video to a company called Uncharted Territory in LA. They won the Academy Award for special effects for Independence Day. And I showed them, I sat there with them. We put the thing out. I said, can you guys duplicate that? And they said, yeah, we can duplicate. I said, how would you do it? Oh, they said, well, we'd use CG. I said, he didn't use CG. They said, well, what is that? I said, that's an 8mm film taken in 1975. They said, and they've got, I've got their quote somewhere on my website. I put it to, and they said, it would be virtually impossible to do that without wires and rigging and all that to get it to look real. Now, I worked with a skeptic in London, started with him in 2009, where I supported his efforts to duplicate Billy's photos. And he did a great job, except he wouldn't have his photos analyzed because obviously they were models. As good as they were, he knew they're going to come up as models. So that's why I always say the prophetic information, copyrights are the internationally recognized legal standard of proof of first or prior publication. It doesn't mean that what's copyrighted is true. It means that whoever copyrighted, whatever, they did it first. That's why we have copyrights, songwriters, movie scripts. Meyer, we've got hundreds of these now. So that's why I say to people, you can do whatever you want with all of the documentation we've got on the photos. We've got four different sound laboratories that analyze the sound recordings Meyer made twice out in a field with 17 people, including an undercover cop. People from 4 kilometers away heard the sounds. They came. They couldn't see the crap. He's out there with an Iowa recorder. They analyze it, 4 studios, including one in L.A. that I recorded in years ago called Excalibur, and the Groton Naval Undersea Lab in Connecticut. None of them could duplicate it. Then there's the metal samples that were turned over to Marcel Vogel. Skeptics tried to say, oh, they're just little squiggles of lead. Marcel Vogel said, no. And he videotaped his analysis, and he said, I can't duplicate this with any technology available to me as a scientist at IBM. Take all the physical evidence, but go to the prophetic stuff, and it trumps everything.
Interesting stuff, and I know a lot of people in the chat room are loving this. And but we're going to hear from George Norrie, our good friend, talking about Contact in the Desert, where Michael Horn's going to be doing a lecture and a workshop, and we're going to talk more about that in our next segment. But we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere with Michael Horn.
Join me, George Norrie, in Indian Wells, California, for the 7th Annual Contact in the Desert UFO Conference, May 31st to June 3rd. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure filled with exciting explorations into ancient aliens, human origins, crop circles, UFO sightings, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact. This amazing weekend offers over 50 lectures, 40 workshops, 8 exciting panels, special events, and a luncheon that I'm hosting. Contact in the Desert also features leading experts including Giorgio Tsoukalos, David Wilcock, Linda Moulton Howe, Michael Tellinger, Eric von Däniken, Doc Wallach, and many more important researchers and scientists in the field. Contact in the Desert is your place for inside information. Join us at thecontactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. It's time to make contact. That's contactinthedesert.com. Don't miss it. Contactinthedesert.com.
All right, we're back. This is Tony Sweet and Captain Ron. We have the one and only Michael Horn with us. And Michael, somebody in the chat room brought this up, but it was something I wanted you to kind of talk about. I don't know if you'll be talking about this at Contact, but is it Talmud of Emmanuel?
right?
Could you talk about that a little bit more? Because I know people in the chat room are asking about it, and I kind of want to know a little bit more before we get back to the pictures.
Here's what I like to say generally, not all of them, but generally. I will say there's certain things in the Meyer case that I can prove that are absolutely real and true. And when I say I can prove them, I generally say that anybody can, because all I've done is researched what's there and gotten other expert stuff. And okay, there's some things that I call speculative. I might accept that they're true and real, but I can't prove that in the same way I can prove the evidence in the Meyer case. The right. Talmud Emmanuel purports to be the original teaching and writing of a man named Emmanuel, who we know by the false name of Jesus Christ, a human being who never lived, never walked the earth, and for whom there's actually zero credible historical evidence. All the evidence of his existence is, if you will, in religious books and tracts. People are free to believe or not believe, and I'm not here to attack that. I'm here to lay out what this is. In about 1964, Meyer and a former Greek Orthodox priest named Issa Rashid were, this is again according to information in the case, directed telepathically by the Pleiaren extraterrestrials to the outskirts of Jerusalem, Old Jerusalem, where they came upon what would look like a hillside or a burn, and there was a hole at the base of it that was open. They could detect that. Their attention was directed to it. They dug their way in, opening the hole large enough for them to get inside, and when they found themselves inside, there were stones, large stones on the floor. It was obviously to them an ancient tomb. And they unearthed, they lifted stones as Meyer had been apparently instructed would be necessary years earlier. I guess it's 1963. I sometimes jump ahead a year. And what they did is they found resin encrusted animal skin wrapped scrolls, parchments written in Aramaic, which were entrusted to Issa Rashid. There were some artifacts in there as well that were, we are told, intended for Meyer personal things, a piece of gypsum and some little figurines. Over a period of several years, Issa Rashid, who could read and write Aramaic and also apparently was fluent in German or close to it, translated a chunk of these scrolls and sent the text back to Meyer in Switzerland. He also told Meyer that it may be problematic for him to be in touch with them anymore because certain parties were aware of him, aware that he had these scrolls, and he would have to be leaving pretty soon because he felt endangered. Indeed, he and his family took the scrolls and they fled into a refugee village in Lebanon. They sequestered the scrolls in one of the buildings there, a home. And it is said that within about a week or so of that, the Israelis came in and literally bombed the village almost to oblivion. Issa Rashid and his family escaped with their lives. The scrolls were destroyed. And some years later, about 4 years later, I think it was, Meyer heard that Rashid and his family had been machine gunned to death in Baghdad, ostensibly by the Mossad. Okay, so come back to the Talmud Emmanuel. Meyer takes the first translation of it and publishes it in German, I think, in about 1978. The first English translation comes out in about 1990, and it attracts the attention of this professor, James Dierdorf, who I said was a professor of comparative religions as well as meteorology. He looks at it briefly, says, this looks like a Bible hoax. I'm going to go at it. He spends a year or two or whatever it is researching it, comes out with his own book called Celestial Teaching. His findings were that this is the original document, original writing upon which the book of Matthew is based, not the other way around, that this is the original teaching. And here's this man, Emmanuel, in it. Now, there's a lot in this book that's extremely interesting and provocative. The final translation came out a couple years ago. We make that available now. It's a book this thick because Meyer and ostensibly the Pleiaren have input a lot of information about the history of those times, other religions, and interesting information not known about what the original Talmud was about that was taken out of the New Testament, including the fact that there were 17 female disciples that never made it into the New Testament. Many things in there clarify in some ways. As a matter of fact, Dierdorf said that the Talmud resolved over 325, I think it was, inconsistencies that scholars had noted in the New Testament, in the book of Matthew, that 125 of those weren't even discussed until well after the Talmud had first been published as well. We learn in there how it was that Emmanuel, a.k.a. Jesus, allegedly actually healed people. He wasn't raising anybody from the dead, since that's impossible. How he was taught herbology, meditation, different things by masters in India during those missing years that we hear about. It's an amazing book, and you'll get things like the Sermon on the Mount that are in there. It's just that those sentences that he is said in the Talmud to have actually uttered, in some cases are a bit different and some quite different than what we have in the Christian Bible, which we already know has been redacted, edited, et cetera, anyhow, over the centuries. So this is one of the Talmud, I think, is one of the reasons why Myers had 23 attempts on his life. It's not just the UFOs, because if the Talmud is indeed true, it's one of those things that will ultimately lead to the overturning of so many beliefs worldwide, and that doesn't make you real popular with certain folks.
Yeah, regardless, this is an interesting guy. He's had 23 attempts on his life.
Right.
I mean, it's just this unique one-armed old guy. I mean, it's an interesting.
I've talked to eyewitnesses to 14 of the events. I know these people. I've seen bullet holes for one place. The last event that I know of happened just a few years ago, when he and a guy I know named Daniel stepped out of the computer room on the property and somebody shot, you know, they tried to get him at night with rifles or something from places. Anyway, they almost hit Daniel instead of Meyer, and then the bullet went through a hole in a window on the property. I mean, it's like Wendell Stevens, who was the original investigator, was sitting with Meyer. I think it was one of the earlier attempts in Switzerland. Meyer was sitting there talking. He literally fell forward, and they'd heard a crack sound just simultaneous. When they kind of looked around, there was a bullet hole right where Meyer's head would have lined up with. I mean, this, in our, we've got a free film online called The Silent Revolution of Truth. And in there, Billy describes how he had a dream warning him about one of the assassination attempts, and he shows he had in the dream been warned of what would happen. So he had an agenda book, you know, and he put a metal plate in it, put it in his shirt, under his jacket. So when he went out the next day, because he knew what was going to happen, I think it was in that case a woman came out with a handgun, shot him point blank there, and then she sees he doesn't fall over. She runs away. So we see the agenda book. We see the metal plate with the indentation from the bullet. The bullet, you know. And then there's another thing where Billy shot a hat off a guy's head who shot at him. This woman eventually came back, sent him a message or called him and said, listen, can I apologize to you for trying to kill you? He said, well, yes, of course. If you meet Meyer, he's just the most matter of fact person. You don't know from talking with him. This is a guy since the age of 5, he claims, is going back and forth with extraterrestrials plunging through the universe. So,
right. One would say then that maybe these alien buddies of his would have protected him from all these.
They did, to a degree, in the early days. That first thing with Wendell Stevens, he was probably nudged out of the way. But they made it clear, and you can read it in the transcripts. They say, look, from here on, you're going to have to do more to protect yourself because, you know, this is your life. You live down here. We can't just do it all for you on this basis. So there is a certain perimeter that he's relatively safe in now, near where he lives, but he's got to be very careful.
Well, here's an interesting claim that I've heard that is a Billy Meyer claim, that he saw a UFO under the Great Pyramid. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, according to the information of the case, it is. So I tie this in with something that may be familiar to people in the chat room, which is Edgar Cayce in his writings, because Edgar Cayce was a genuine seer. He wasn't the contactee with extraterrestrials, but he had a particular gift. It's said that it was a form of schizophrenia. He would go to sleep, and then he could do all this stuff. Anyway, in his readings, he described a large craft underneath the Great Pyramid. And in 1953, I think it was about 53, that Meyer, in the transcripts, is taken about a mile below the Great Pyramid to see the base of a group of human extraterrestrials who had been on the planet at that time already for thousands of years and who were involved in trying to get control over the planet without having to wipe everybody out. And some people will even know names connected to some of these people. There are people in the New Age paranormal UFO community who heard of a guy called Ashtar, who was indeed one of the members of this grouping, as was, according to this information, somebody we know today as Jehovah. Hmm. This gets, as I said, 23 attempts on Meyer's life, not for no reason. So Meyer is taken down there, allegedly, by a woman named Asket, who is an extraterrestrial from a partner race, not in this universe, but a race that works with the Pleiaren. He is shown this base. He's shown the craft and smaller craft, and he's shown some. He looks over while they're down there, and he sees what appears to be the cross of the crucifixion, the spear of destiny, the crown of thorns, bloody nails. He goes, well, those are the nails of the crucifixion. That's all the artifacts from the crucifixion. What's going on? She says, well, actually, they're not. These are artifacts that have been recreated by these people who have fantastic technology, and this would even pass muster if your scientists would examine it. Here's the reason for it. There's a California corn merchant whose name is Reinhold Schmidt, and he is telepathically being controlled by these people. He is being convinced that he will be the second coming, and they will control him and their agenda to come forward to reveal the artifacts of the crucifixion and all of this, because their agenda is to have a one-world religion whereby they can control everybody. And he gets a lot of information about these people. And Meyer says, well, why don't you take these people off of our world? And they say, well, we can't. They have free will. And you human beings of Earth have free will. We are not allowed. However, it was 25 years later that the this group called the Bafath tried to kill Meyer and instead used a sonic weapon that beamed down onto a Pleiaren craft instead of hitting Meyer's home. And it was at that point in 78 that they were allowed to take these people. This is better than this Star Wars and steroids.
It right? sure is, Michael. Let me ask you this last point of contention that I have is that doesn't he claim also something like all of the other UFO reports are false, and yet his is real, to something to that effect?
Just say all the UFO reports are false, because here's the thing. There have been throughout history other sightings prior to our time, sightings of other extraterrestrial craft, some of which occasionally still take place today. What he has said and what the alleged extraterrestrials have said is people who claim to be contactees with extraterrestrials are not telling the truth. Mm-hmm. And they don't have the evidence to back it up. And this is where people, you know, throw tomatoes at me. And I say, look, just bring forward evidence. You know, I often will say, look, I don't care if there's 100 contactees in the world. I'm not one of them. Yes, I've received information from the Pleiaren. Thank you very much. I've been within 20 feet of one of their craft, and I represent, as far as I know, the only scientifically proven case. So when George Norrie says, as he's done 2 years in a row, thank you, George, Michael Horn is the world's leading authority in UFOs, I say, fine. Billy Meyer would be more, obviously, and other people in Switzerland, but Meyer doesn't care about the UFOs. Coming back to your question. Nobody to date can present evidence of verifiable evidence of anything of extraterrestrial manufacture or origin. Hmm. What about implants? We have had biochips in development for over 30 years. In 1958, Billy Meyer writes in this long predictive document of his, in the coming time, the U.S. and the EU, the European Union, will attempt to biochip every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth to control them. That's going on right now. Those biochip things have existed for a long time. They've only gotten better. And sometimes they're found in people as implants because the abductions and the mutilations are secret military. This has been told to me not only by Meyer in detail, but by a guy who knew nothing about the Meyer case, who worked at Camp Navajo at Dulce and was in the U.S. Army, you know, Army Ranger, as well as in secret military development. He told me how the Rangers could do a so-called abduction thing and people would wake up thinking they were taken away by aliens. So when people get mad at me about this, because I have no problem telling people, if you're going to tell me you're a contactee for the Pleiadians, which don't exist, I'm going to tell you you're a liar. If you get mad about that, all you have to do is present the evidence. But how about this? If the Meyer case is true. What does that mean to us? That's the thing I'm going to be focusing on quite a bit, because the prophetic information in this case has gone far beyond scientific discoveries. They have foretold assassinations going back to the Kennedys, going back to kings and rulers of countries, earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and things that he was taught about in 1948 that are happening now.
Well, give us one now. What should we be wary of now? What prophecy has he been told?
Well, okay, here it is. If I just drop it as a thing, we are in the time of unstoppable environmental destruction, geopolitical upheaval. And that will include also, he was foretelling this terrorism in the 40s and 50s because the extraterrestrial. Meyer warned about radical Islamic terrorism taking down France. He wrote about it in 58 and in 81 and subsequently. And it was a skeptical professor at NAU up here who brought me into his class twice. Skeptical guy to lecture on this. After he writes me an email 2 days after the November 2015 bombing. He says, you know, I told my wife after this happened that I already knew this was happening. Thanks for sending me Billy's information before it happened. So I can establish the credibility of this to anybody beyond a reasonable doubt. I've had a lawyer write me about it saying, this is beyond a reasonable doubt. This is ironclad. To answer your question more specifically, we can now not stop the things that he warned about in 51 and 58, which is environmental destruction. Climate change is now climate destruction. Global warming, there's global cooling. There's ice ages. Everything has cycles, cause and effect, positive, negative. The radical terrorism, you know, when Trump announced that that was over some months ago, I said, gee, I wonder if Billy's wrong, because he said, this is not going to stop. I've got a video up from 3-4 years ago just saying this is going to be worldwide. It's the worst thing ever. It's not stopping. There are sleepers in our country. We have two civil wars coming here that I laughed about when I read it in Meyer's documents from 1981. What's this guy talking about? Civil war in America? And again in 87, he puts it in there. In the future, the U.S. will have two terrible civil wars, one following upon the other, and it can't be helped, but the country will break up into five territories with dictatorial sectarian rule playing a prominent part. Hmm. What? It's the coming global financial crash. He told me about, I have a video online on YouTube, 2006. I go to visit Billy. Say, Billy, tell me, fundamentally, is the Iraq war about oil? Oh, no, not fundamentally, no. Fundamentally, it's about your dollar. If things go a certain way here in the future, you may as well roll cigarettes with your paper money. In 2017, he fleshed that out. There is a coming global financial crash. We will move to cashless society. This country's hierarchy, military and police, will be turned against the citizens of the country, which I never thought would be possible, but that's in Meyer's predictions. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. This whole thing that I have an article or three actually about reverse engineering the prophecies and predictions, meaning if that prophecy, let's just say about the civil wars or the financial crash is true, what can we look at in our events as they proceed day to day that could culminate in such a thing? Well, now Trump is doing, I'm not political, I don't care, it's Trump good, bad, whatever. Trump is fighting, putting these tariffs in place. He's got sanctions on countries. Then if you sit back for a minute, you go, "What? How can one country sanction another country? Because, and tariffs, that is going to destroy this country. You look at the dominoes, the cause and effect of what it does to prices, to purchasing, to products, to employment. These things are going to just like dominoes go straight through. The play Aaron told Meyer before the election, Trump will be elected and there will be a whole legal thing done to get him out of office based on a lie about Russian collusion. It won't be true. But it doesn't mean, we don't know how that will turn out yet, they said in 2000, what was that, 16? You know, whatever that, yeah. So they said, but that's not true. They don't like him. And Billy says, well, what kind of a guy is this Trump? They said, well, he's a chaotic person. He's got some good things, some things that aren't so good. He, you know, has very bad policies with the environment, and he doesn't seem to care about putting in a good healthcare system for the people. On the other hand, he wants to stay out of the globalization. He wants to bridge the relationship with Russia. But the problem will be that those people around him will try very hard to push him into a war footing mode against Russia. You've got so much material in this case that is geopolitical, not in terms of partisanship for Republicans and Democrats, but simply an overview based on what is seen by outsiders about what we are doing here. The key that I'm going to get into in my workshop is what are the things we can do for our own individual and collective selves to ride out what is coming. If this is true, this isn't about, pardon me, folks, Space Brothers and imaginary ascension and hypnotic regret. None of that. It's not going to get us anywhere. If this is real, if these things, Meyer was told in 2015, Meyer said, since between 2001 and 2015, of the 175 so-called terror events in America, only six did not lead back to the FBI and CIA. This is a Swiss guy living up there saying, this is false flag stuff. There is stuff in here people never get past, well, you know, the UFOs. I say, tell people, forget about UFOs. You can't do anything with it. There's absolutely no value right now, pardon me, in focusing on UFOs. I have the best evidence in history. In this case, I'll show it, and then let's get over it. Because you can look at Billy's best photos and films all day long, and that if that doesn't move you to go farther, because the next step, when the prophetic information was starting to be viewed, then I'm going, we have 250 or more specific things, no errors, no theories, simply fact, and they're all right. I go, well, why? And then I went, okay, there's something called the spiritual teaching. What's that? Non-religious, belief-free teaching. Like if you want to learn how to fix a car or a computer or, you know, do this or that, you get a textbook that's totally neutral instructions. You do this, you do that. Do you get the result that they say you'll get? That's how you know if your teaching is good. This is the teaching for us to correct our thinking, to take back effectively our personal power, our dominion over ourselves, and to work with like-minded people who all, not everybody has to be into the Meyer material, but people who can think straight, who prioritize, who are useful to each other, who can barter when the time comes, who have services and training and education and things of value, growing food, farming, number one. We're going to just be screwed because of all the damage being done by all the floods foretold by Meyer going back to the 50s that would create famines. So this, again, I'm not saying anything that needs to be believed. I'm simply telling you what's in this material, and I'm giving you my opinion about why this case. What's the reason for the Meyer case? It's not for me to lecture about UFOs. It's not for us to chase lights in the sky. You know, people, oh, I'm going to go out and report on, you're reporting on secret military. I'll reveal some information in my workshop from a guy who's still working in aerospace, who was, they tried to recruit him for a famous five-letter UFO research group who turns over all their material to the CIA and State Department, because basically what people are reporting on is how effective is the technology of the military / secret military with their craft. So when they're doing this stuff, what is the appearance to people? Folks, we've been badly misled. And, you know, just don't bring tomatoes. If you don't like my workshop, I'll take any questions and any challenges, because I'm only going to direct you to do this for yourselves. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do. I mean, truth be told, we always say we're not the experts. I mean, but what we are is we bring this to the table to start other people's conversations and give them the opportunity to go seek it out. Because I do believe that, you know, so many of the leaders of our countries and the world have put blinds over our eyes just and kind of want us to be sheep. And that's what we want to
avoid
and just get them to get interested. So please listen to this. And if you can't make it to contact, which we hope you can, Michael, they can go to theyfly.com, and you also have a blog. Where can they go?
Yeah, theyflyblog.com is my most active site because, you know, we have a forum there, people responding to questions, posing challenges, and I try to get stuff up there more regularly. One of the things that happened recently within the past couple months is my girlfriend and I went up to visit a scientist at what's called the USGS up here. They have a, you know, a facility in Arizona, and he works on this Mars project that's going on, a Mars mission project with a rover and astrophotography and all this stuff. He's a very nice guy. He took an impromptu meeting with us. I didn't have an appointment. He came out, and I brought him in. What did I bring him? I brought him several sheets of paper full of... I'm sorry?
Okay. You froze there for a second.
I brought him Meyer's information on Mars that Meyer had published verifiably up to, let's say, 25 or 30 years, actually 32 years before we discovered it. Mm. And he didn't even know. There was one thing with lightning on Mars, and he says, I'm unaware of any lightning on Mars. Well, NASA actually discovered lightning on Mars in 2009, but Meyer published it in 1989. And then when you get to this other kicker of what's called asteroid Apophis, which is heading towards Earth, NASA discovers it in 2004, but Meyer warned about it starting in 1981. Hmm. It is going to slam into this planet, and unless it's deflected, and NASA denied it for the longest time, any threat, then they changed their estimate of the size of the object to within 25 meters of what Meyer published. I mean, this is the kind of thing. And instead, folks, stop worrying about UFOs and imaginary reptiles and all the rest of it that aren't here. This is your life. Value it. And if you want, if you can tear this apart, whatever, that's fine. Just do the due diligence. And then there are no experts. If you want to be honest about it, we can research. We make determinations for ourselves. We bring it forward.
Mm. That's it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Our time is up for this hour, but we really appreciate you joining us, and we're going to see you at Contact. We're excited to meet you in person. We'll definitely stop by your workshop and lecture. Go to contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets. Go to theyfly.com and theyflyblog.com and check out Michael's work and join his blog there. But we appreciate you joining us. People in the chat room, thank you so much for always being there and your conversations. And also subscribe, share this episode with everybody you can find and interested in this stuff, and go to our website, truthbetoldworldwide.com. Perfect. But until next time, we'll see you guys soon. And Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care.